Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Developer Tools team.
And today we have...
Philip from Pocket Casts.
And Ben, also from Pocket Casts.
Wait a minute, they're not from Google.
They're not from Google, but even more confusing, it's like a recursive thing. If we're recording a podcast that's going to be featured on Pocket Casts, I think the world implodes. I don't know what to do with this.
I think we're allowed to feature our own podcast, right? That's the rule.
Yeah, this podcast ought to show up in the top of the Discover page right?
Is there a way that you could just pin this episode on everyone's UI forever?
Are you just doing this for numbers?
Just download directly on their phone.
I've been using Pocket Cast for, seems like forever. When was it first released?
It was 2010 it was released. So initially,
that's
been
a while ago.
Yes, it's been a long time. Been a lot of versions.
Was it on Gingerbread at that time? You must have been testing it on Gingerbread.
So I think it first came out maybe not on Android, but the release date for Android was maybe about a year later. So
okay,
someone so Honeycomb.
Yes, classic.
All right. Yeah, I listened to a podcast on a tablet. I think I started using Google Listen initially. That was like some sort of, it wasn't even a 20% project, right? It was some internal thing that I don't think we ever released, or I think we released it, but it wasn't official. With no offense to whoever worked on it, it wasn't that great. And that's why I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy a podcast app.
Podcasts were, it was a bit chaotic at that time. Like I was trying other things that were free, but not good.
Yes.
Finding the things and getting them there and actually playing. And then the first time I tried Pocket Cast, I'm like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to be.
Same for me.
Yeah, I think I spend more on coffee in a single day than I spent on Pocket Casts.
We actually brought a designer with us. So that was what kind of the thing we had going for us, I think. Like in the early days, I don't think Google Listen really was much about the design, right? It was an RSS reader and they added...
Yeah, and I don't think it was not an official product, right?
No. Like, I think it was just someone's like, "Hey, I need a podcast app. Let me build one." And it was very sort of search heavy, and it was interesting, but it wasn't really, I think, a consumer product.
We do engineering here. Yes, we do. So is that where Pocket Cast began? I think you had said to me earlier you had another app.
Yeah, so we've got an Australian weather app. Yeah. So despite the fact of it just being sunny in Australia, Australians are obsessed with weather.
Very easy application to write then.
It's just completely fake data.
It's a very small app.
It's raining spiders today.
And that's still going today, the weather app. So that's, I guess not many people know about that, but that's kind of our second app.
Does it work outside of Australia? Or can you, I guess, do you watch the Australian weather when you're here?
I think if you did it from here, you'd probably end up like right on the coast somewhere. So if you're doing Follow Me, it doesn't work, no.
So that was a follow-on from Pocket Cast, or that was before Pocket?
That was before. So that's our original one. So we used to have like a day job. And in the evenings, we started kind of development, me and Russell. And then it got to a point where it's like, if we're going to make a break for this and do this on our own like full-time, we should do that now. So we originally started with Pocket Weather. And then it was about a year or two later after that, we're like, okay, now... we need to do something maybe a bit more global. It's not just in Australia. So we thought, I guess we love podcasts and we still do. So that was the reason for coming up with Pocket Cast.
It was between that or New Zealand weather. You're going to really branch
out. We did think about that. Yeah. But no, it's even smaller than Australia. So it was like, no, I'm trying to get a bigger market if possible.
All right, cool. So the first version, on Android 2011-ish? Then I think everybody knew more about it when you were one of the first apps to really integrate with Material Design.
Yeah, we managed to win a design award. I'm not sure how, but that was good. We were doing things like with Material Design, we're really excited that it was a kind of a common kind of design across all the apps. Because it felt like before it was all a bit kind of you just came up with your own design. So we kind of went heavy into that. It was kind of fun doing some of the things like the play button. We were doing that like the animation from pause to play. We can remember whiteboarding it, like putting the points up and really putting quite a lot of effort into that.
I think that was before a lot of apps were doing things like that. So it really kind of stood out.
Well, we didn't even have like animated vector drawables or anything like this to make it easy to implement.
So we've kind of, from that stage, Material Design, we didn't change it a lot after that. Until recently, where we did version 7, we're coming with that old code from the start. We kind of took it all out. It's now all Kotlin. It's now all Jetpack. Well, mostly Jetpack. So
okay. All right. So let's talk about that. So we've been talking to people at, by the way, we're recording this during the Google I.O. week. Doesn't matter, but I.O. is on my mind. A lot of people have been talking to us this week about Kotlin and like if they're not using it now, like how do they get started? The easy story is, well, if you're starting a new project, write it in Kotlin. But if you have an existing code base in the Java programming language, then how do you decide, you know what, let's ditch all this old stuff. I know that it's working, but wouldn't it be nice if we just rewrote it instead?
Yeah, I think we do the same thing. We start with like new classes. We're like, we write this in Kotlin. But then you kind of like fall in love with just the syntax. Just over Java, it seems so verbose. And then you're like, okay, you go to another class and it's like 200 lines. And you're like, just start twitching. It's got getters and setters. And you're like, you've got to write the hash code or... It's just easier to rewrite it in the end.
I'm just picturing you in front of your computer twitching all the time.
Yes.
I feel the same way. You know, like I have to touch a class that, you know, in older code. I'm like, I'm going to port this first just because.
So it goes from like reformatting someone's ugly indents to just, well, we'll just rewrite instead. It should be
in
the menu.
It's so easy with the auto conversion. It doesn't do a perfect job, but like, that is sort of the, okay,
it's
I do that.
Starting
and
point.
Now it's just like, okay, I just clean it up a little and it's a lot better. And then suddenly you have, you know, the null safety and all these other things that are just
so did you use the auto conversion or did you just rewrite?
I got really good at using the auto converter and then kind of fixing up from there. I heard something interesting from one of the companies. They were saying they weren't letting you check in Java again. If it was under 300 lines, you had to convert it. So once over that, then... You could leave for now, but the shorter files you had to convert as part of your check-in process.
Nice.
Which is, I think was that's actually not a bad idea, I think.
Yeah, if you set the goal of, hey, we want over time migrate, it's probably good to have some guidelines for when to do it and when not to do it.
Yeah. It could also be like a check at review time or part of the review process, just automatic minus one if it's actually not in Kotlin.
So I think we're now about, was it like over 90% Kotlin?
Yeah, we have 90% Java left. So yeah.
Wow, that's pretty aggressive conversion.
Because we were kind of converting over to Jetpack as well. So it's like, now's the time if we're going to rewrite and break stuff. We're going to do a full test, so you might as well do it at the same time.
So what pieces of Jetpack are you using? What was the motivation for using that stuff and what are you using so far?
Yeah, so we pretty much use every Jetpack library so far except navigation.
Are you sure about every one of them? We have 70 libraries.
We've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Okay, maybe not 70. But all of the, you know, the big new ones from I.O. We were at I.O. in 2016 or 17. Can't remember which year. And it was like perfectly timed because you were up on stage announcing all of these exciting new libraries. And we were, we're about to rewrite the app. We're going to use them all.
That's courageous.
Yeah.
It's great.
And we definitely did jump in too early on a couple. Like, we were shipping Work Manager alphas.
Yes.
And that was a mistake.
And we did Job Scheduler before that, so we kind of went with...
It was because, we had Job Scheduler and we had all these problems with it. And then, of course, you're on stage, Work Manager solves every problem. And we were just, whoa.
And it did, right?
It definitely did. Like, we stripped so much code. The code for Work Manager is so much shorter than our Job Scheduler code was. So it just took us a few goes to kind of get it right.
Was that because it was an alpha release, or was it the way in which you were using Work Manager wasn't quite what
you were doing? Yeah, so the way we understood it wasn't quite right.
Okay.
So we had to, I can't remember now, what did we do?
I think what you mean is the documentation was not good enough.
No, because we probably just didn't read it.
That's usually what happens when there's no docs. Developers complain when there's docs, they don't read it.
Yeah, that must be frustrating. Sorry about that.
Keeps us employed.
No, because we had... Actually, yeah, I do remember. At first, we had our kind of database calls for tracking the state of a job actually in the worker, which works great, except for when, say, the worker is cut off for some reason or the app crashes and then the app starts back up and that database was never updated to say... it's not running or something. So you'd get a thing saying your episode is downloading when it wasn't.
That explains a lot of things I've seen then.
Yeah, there you go. So now we obviously fixed that. We moved it out. We've got the live data tracking the job status. And so that should all be fixed now.
So that was because of the integration then with Work Manager and some of the lifecycle stuff? Like as you tied the pieces together, that got easier?
Yeah, so Work Manager at first didn't support Dagger injection. Well, it still doesn't fully. They now support dependency injection. There's just not a nice Dagger. You know, you can't put a worker in your Dagger inject. And so at the time, we were trying to work out, we've got this whole Dagger set up, but we can't get to the libraries or the classes we need inside our worker. And so we had, you know, we were just updating the database directly. And so that's why we did it like that at first. And then eventually they added, this is what I mean, we shipped too early because we were on like alpha 4 or something. And so I think dependency injection came in one of the later alphas. And so once they added that, we upgraded to that. And then we could actually access the classes we needed in order to get the data we needed. And then it was all fixed.
But, you know, one of the reasons we're doing alpha is so that we can get that kind of feedback.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Thanks for taking one for the team.
Yeah, and the Work Manager team are very responsive. So,
did you submit those as bugs or find them online and stock them?
Yeah, we just stock them online, basically. Okay. So
we do get a lot. I mean, even though bugs are the best way to report problems, we do get a fair amount of feedback via other channels too. That is still helpful.
Yeah.
Right. There are some problems people assume this is so bad that of course someone already reported this, but like no one is. They're all just like talking about, hey, did they fix? I see this often when we release something. There'll be a Reddit thread where they're saying, hey, did they fix the layout formatting problem yet? I'm like, which layout formatting problem are they talking about?
Yeah,
and there's no bug for it. But by the way, listeners, you don't have to tell us about that one. That one we know now.
And so what other libraries did you use from the architecture components? So Work Manager.
We have Room, View Model. What else?
Data Binding.
Data Binding.
Right. One we haven't done is the navigation.
But yeah, that one's brand new.
Yeah, so I think that's one we're going to do when we get back. We've had a few issues with trying to arrange, sort of backstack out and figure out when you hit back where it's meant to go, whether it's meant to exit the app or whether it's meant to go to another temp. So
actually, one of the things I noticed after your material design rework was you're one of the few apps doing some of those transition animations between screens. I would hope that would get easier with navigation because I know the team worked on that a lot.
Yeah, there's still, I've been trying to do this for years, but I'm trying to animate the grid going through, but I'm having, maybe it's me, but I'm just having trouble trying to animate smoothly across. But I think now with the navigation stuff, I might try again and see if I can get that animating. I think with things like the motion layout, I'm not. That would be good because obviously when we move things, we're also resizing stuff, we're scaling, we're fading. Right. So
it's really good, that exact thing, when you want to coordinate many things together and make it all look good.
And the problem is that if your content is a scrolling grid, a recycle view of some kind, constant layouts, motion layouts not going to help you there. Because the items have to be part of motion layout itself, I think.
Oh, the individual items. Oh, you want to, in a list view, you want to, or recycler view, you want to have...
List view. Did he say list view?
He said list view. He works on tools, doesn't know about apps and...
This is true.
Android classic.
Because we did it with a player, so you put up the player using your finger and things resize as you scale, as you're scrolling up. So I think motion layout might be good for that. Because as it's moving, you can track it, and then you can scale other buttons to match. But this one is, the recycle view. You're tapping on an image, and then it's making some kind of motion movement.
Yep.
It would be across fragments as well.
Yeah.
So we converted shared element transition.
We converted from having many activities to now one activity, main activity, and the fragment, so that we could eventually get that going.
Yeah, so navigation will definitely help you there.
Yeah, I think that's probably not a motion layout, because separate ways of doing that.
Okay. And so speaking of UI, so you had this big UI redesign into the latest major version. Why? I like it, but
I think the thing was like we did material design and we felt like we left it for so long. We got a few comments like, you look a bit like Gmail. So like, how can we kind of like, how can we get around this? And lots of new things was coming out in material design. So the bottom navigation was very new. And that navigation drawer was starting to feel old. I don't know whether everyone agrees, but...
Well, good thing good thing because you've seen the new gesture stuff in Android Q.
Yes.
So, yeah. Good call
there.
The other approach, though, is if you looked like Gmail, you could introduce mail concepts into your podcast application.
Marcus,
you're already there.
Yeah. Marcus listened, same.
Well, speaking we did add archive. So.
Speaking of Gmail, it's always confusing to me because when I first signed up for an account, because you have this ability to create an account where you synchronize your podcast, which is really handy for those of us who work on Android who are switching devices frequently. And I managed to put a typo into my email address, and I'm stuck with it forever. So now I always have to remember when I'm signing in a new device, oh yeah, it's not really my Gmail address. It's this other one with a typo in one character. So, you know.
There is a change email.
Yeah, there is. We can fix that.
And that is actually account name, not just the. Because some software will have an account name and an associated email, and so they're kind of disconnected. But I can actually change my account name. I love getting tech support on this podcast. This is like the best.
That's
part
the only
of it.
Reason we're doing this, right?
Not through the app, but
okay,
it's coming into support. The app soon. But at the moment, it's just
spoilers.
Oh, sorry. Oh. That's V8. Sorry.
World exclusive. This is why you should follow our podcast. Okay, cool.
So, what was difficult? Right? Everything is easy now. Doing Android development, I'm sure. So you're probably working on some future version that which we would never talk about here. But what's difficult about doing Android development? Maybe that you've solved already, you know, with some of the Jetpack components, or maybe that is still difficult.
What were the challenges that you're running into?
I think definitely that the Jetpack has helped us solve that, because you'd get a new member on the team and you've written your own custom like database library. So now as soon as someone comes on, they know where everything is. They know how it works.
Yeah.
That was definitely an issue before, because you could pick, there's so many different libraries you can pick. So now knowing, kind of having some guide is really good for us.
Is that architecture guide as well? Was that helpful, or did you already have your own architecture for your app?
No, actually the architecture guide, well, just I guess the view model library in general, was that's been really good.
Yeah.
So we were kind of already doing that, but it was just nice to have an official class for it.
Yep.
And then people understand it when they see the app now, I think. Well, developers, if you open that app, you see, oh, they're using view model and live data. So it's kind of standard now, I guess.
Right.
Even though it's still very new. But
yeah, it seems some people, if they have a different approach to their own architecture, they always want to have an argument about the fact that we're doing the thing that they're not, or we're doing it wrong or something. Like, we still want to make it clear.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. You can have a different one. We just wanted to have some standard if people were looking for one.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. You came out and actually said, this is our opinion.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, we may as well follow that then, because
It took us many years to understand that, you know, you app developers wanted us to have an opinion. Because before that, I mean, we're kind of flabbergasted that we kept telling developers, no, do what you want. And we thought that people would like that. Apparently not. They wanted guidance, which I understand. But
well, it's in software, it's frustrating when you are prevented from doing something you're trying to do, right? So like there's just, I can't do this thing that I want. That's frustrating, right? But I think we maybe took it to the extreme where
we went
limitations, and therefore it's up to you to decide everything.
Because it's not as extreme as something like Rails, where the whole framework's there and you can't really do much else. Whereas this is more... It's just a guide, right? You don't have to follow it. But it does make sense when you're like getting new people on board. They know where everything is. It's all kind of common, rather than you've each rolled your own version of that class, or you're using a different library. But
so any other challenges that you run into, maybe in the original versions? Because those were on, I mean, 2011, Android has come a long way since then. We improved a few things.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I think with animations, I've always found quite hard. Like you say, that motion layouts come out now to try and help with that, trying to kind of coordinate that. There's a lot of code I've written just to try and make that happen for certain things. So there's also new things, like, I guess you've got Lottie now. So we've used Lottie for a few things when we want to do something more complicated. Because you see some, you open some like the Google Wi-Fi app and it's like an amazing animation going on. Like, we really like that style and that design, but trying to get that in an app has been quite hard in the past.
Yeah, animations was a bit frustrating for us as well. One of the points was some of the decisions we made very early on in the toolkit, like, you know, all the views get clipped and things like that, which made it very difficult to build things like the transitions. And transitions remain pretty difficult to use if you want something very custom.
Right. Yeah, the nice thing, I would say the problem that we never solved with all the different approaches that we took to animations through, you know, Honeycomb and the ensuing releases, was full app coordination of animations was tricky. And I think motion layout is trying to solve that, right? Well, what if I want to, you know, drag this thing along and have things move as I drag, and then I let go, and then we're going to transition to this new state? Like, transitions was kind of a set and forget model, and it worked good if you had an A and B that were static, but if there's something more complicated going on or you want to customize that animation, it's very tricky.
I remember watching your YouTube video many times, just going back. I'm like, okay, this is how I do it. Okay, this is how I do it. Finally trying to sync it in. But yeah.
Yeah.
Constraint layout's been really good for that as well. We have a few spots where we animate between two constraint sets and it just magically works.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, John and Nicola work on constraint layout and motion layout. They care deeply about this kind of things. It's been very good. Constraint layout is.
Do you use the design tool for that? Because that was like the new thing that we were doing there as well, where I think at the time the tools team and the toolkit team were pretty siloed. And so we would develop frameworks that the tools team wasn't necessarily working on, and they were developing design tools for solving other problems.
And so the solution was to build something that was designed neither by the tools team nor the toolkit team.
Yes. And then finally integrate it into those teams. But it was designed from the start with the design tool sort of hand in hand.
I actually don't.
You don't? Okay.
I type them. So I prefer to do the preview window and the XML side by side. Okay. And then the autocomplete's so good that you can literally type below, above.
Yeah.
Because the names are quite long.
Yeah.
It's like constrained below to whatever it is. I don't even know them. But I just type below and hit enter. And
I often use it for like making small adjustments like padding and stuff or trying to figure out why something hasn't gone where I need it to go. It seems like it's getting better and better over time. So
I use it to chain. So if you need to do, I can never remember how to do a vertical chain or a center, all of these. So I'll switch to the design.
Yeah, when we're working on the early versions of constraint layout, that was one of the issues. The XML framework we have to build layouts was not designed for something like constraint layout.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why the guidelines, for instance, in constraint layout are actual views that we get rid of at runtime. Because every tag in your layout file has to be a view. So we're very constrained by the way our XML works. And that's why sometimes it can be easier in the design tool. But the motion layout tool, I think there was a sneak peek.
The motion layout editor tool we were working on in the fall, but then, of course, we put it on hold because of Project Marble. And so we're getting back to that now. But we actually did fix quite a few usability issues in the constraint layout editor.
Yeah, there was a great Medium article, I think, by Chris.
It was a bunch of people on the team all wrote it together, and it sort of highlights all the things we've done. And so I think it's a lot easier now to make tweaks to the constraints. You can now select constraints directly and manipulate them.
In particular, I think they worked hard on the problem we have with constraint layout when you have a lot of widgets close to each other and you have all those constraints and arrows. It can be very difficult to select the right one and you end up deleting constraints. So they worked very hard on fixing these kind of usability issues.
Yeah, now you just drag near and it'll pop up. If it's ambiguous, then you just choose the one you want. So it's,
Or you can use autocomplete.
Yeah.
Or you can
use another go.
Yeah.
That's why we have both modes. They're both great.
I saw in one of the demos, they were like, you can zoom in and it makes it easy. I'm like, why haven't I been doing that? Because it's the same thing. I'd have views really close to each other.
Yeah.
I'd struggle to try and place them exactly where I need to.
The zoom has been there since the beginning.
It has, but just people just haven't tended to use it.
It's over there up in the corner and people miss it. So now I think they made it like more... easier to find.
Yeah. I'm going to totally switch topics unless there was something else on that. One thing I have as a sort of podcast user, I've always been confused about, is when I add a new podcast, and this, I don't know if this was addressed in the latest version or not, but like, there's this ambiguity between, episodes I've never heard and episodes I've listened to, right? So I'll add some new podcast and it's an old podcast, which has 500 episodes. So they all kind of show up and they'll add the latest episode is now, I should listen to this one. But like, how do I go and say, I want to mark everything as something I potentially want to listen to. And I want to treat things that I have listened to as sort of disappearing. Do you know what I'm saying?
We know exactly what you're saying. Cause that was kind of the major thing behind our latest update.
Okay, so that's been fixed now, and I just haven't discovered it.
This is just more bug reports here.
No, because I've been using it for years and years. This was something that always bothered me. Like, I found this great podcast, and now I'm just, especially if I switch devices again. So it's already been subscribed on this new device. I'm not really clear on what I've listened to and what I haven't, right? And if that was fixed in the new version, fantastic.
We try to bring in the concept of, I don't know if it's confusing, but archive. So the fact before it was everything was marked as played.
Yes.
Even if you haven't played it, it was marked as played, where it was kind of destructive. So now we've got the idea you can archive things. So if you're not interested in it now, you might be later. So that was the idea. So you can archive all, or you can long press and archive from that episode downwards.
Oh, good. So I,
sorry,
I missed the point of the new update. You know, I've been using it, but I haven't added new podcast recently. Well, so.
That could be us. Like, maybe we need to be better at like.
I think we definitely need to.
Well, this is just probably new. More years of me thinking this is frustrating. Like, I feel like I'm losing some episodes whenever I switch devices, right? Because there's this weird state where sync will bring them back, but I'm just not sure.
Yeah, but overall, like, you know, having been using Pocket Cast as well for many years, and I subscribe to many, many podcasts, I've always been impressed by how well it manages to follow me from device to device without losing too much.
Yeah.
They said they're good at stalking online, so.
Yeah, apparently. So I have one question about playback. So you have several features. You can speed up the playback. I love it. I listen to podcasts at 2x, and sometimes I meet people who are on podcasts, I'm like, you sound
slow. Very different.
Yeah, I was going to say dumb, but yeah, slow. there's also the voice booster, and there's the silence gap skip thingy.
Yep.
So is that audio processing that you wrote yourself, or how are you doing all this?
Yeah, so in the early days, we were using the media player, and we switched out to use ExoPlayer, mm-hmm. and that made our life so much easier. Like, it used to be like a C library that was imported, and now it's actually in as part of ExoPlayer. But Russell is the one that wrote that, so he's not here, so I can't answer the real technical questions on that. But
you can just lie. Just, okay. Yeah, pretend.
It's magic.
Yep.
So playback speed's definitely done by ExoPlayer. I remember that one.
The skip, the remove silence, is, our own one.
Yeah. I read it the other day, and now I can't remember.
So actually, could we have a moment of silence? See, that would probably just got skipped on the podcast.
Yeah. Right?
So if that didn't work, file a bug.
Good testing.
Yeah, I like that the this skip silence mode like tells you how much time you've saved in your life. It's kind of like the app bragging, like, look what I'm doing for you.
Once again, I feel like I am just clearly not a power user. I didn't know this existed. Is it on by default?
No.
And why not?
I guess it can affect your podcast, so depending on what it is.
In a good way, right?
If it's, like, if it's a music one, maybe it's probably it might ruin the...
Yeah,
because it's not true podcast. Silence. It's more like, this is kind of quiet. We're going to skip it.
Yeah, well, it kind of compresses it, so it doesn't necessarily completely remove it.
It takes like Kenny G songs and reduces them to zero.
Well, it seems like you could, machine learning, you could tell whether it's music or spoken word, right? And then at least in...
I guess
it would ruin some sort of moment of silence thing in a podcast if that was intentional.
Yeah,
it would affect
actually...
the comedic timing.
Comedic timing, it would be totally ruined.
I don't actually use skip silence myself.
Oh.
Because some podcasts are so highly produced these days. You know, they're almost...
Yeah, but there's not enough time to listen to all the podcasts. So
that's very true.
Any second I can say.
That's one class that's not been converted to Kotlin, for sure.
Yeah, true. That is...
It does make you want these features in real life, though, like, you know, speeding up people so that they can just get to the point quicker, and also just stop with the silences already. Right?
I want the opposite. There are some people I want to silence. Like chat.
One thing I like about the I think it's the Playbooks app for audiobooks in Android, when it resumes, it'll find the beginning of the sentence again and sort of, you know, so it never, if you go forward or back, it won't stop mid-word. It'll kind of just make it make sense.
Yeah, wow, that's fancy.
We used to have the feature where it went back slightly, so it'd mm-hmm. go back like 10 seconds or something, but then people complaining that it would go back, so then we had to remove that. So yeah, I guess maybe it could be a setting, but if we could do something where you could do the previous sentence, that'd be amazing. But
yeah,
it sounds super easy to do, Tor. Why don't you do it?
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a machine learning model.
Can
for
you
this.
Put that in Jetpack for us? That's what
I'll
we
ask
find
the
hard
team.
About
actually,
app development.
Actually, I would not be surprised if that app is using ExoPlayer. Maybe it's some hidden feature in ExoPlayer.
So sort of curious from this conversation, like, how much of your work goes into like the infrastructure and, you know, the UI of the app itself versus algorithms that are doing things specific to audio processing or, you know, downloading feeds or whatever.
I think you've actually written most of our code. I don't think we just glue things together. That's our job.
Okay.
We just spend a lot of time on the UI and like server side making that all happen. So it's not all just kind of doing the complicated algorithms.
Because Tor mentioned that there's this sync feature, so that means you have a backend somewhere.
Yeah.
And I assume that the search functionality is sort of like, almost like a storefront, right? Finding what are all the podcasts on the internet. And how do you decide what to include and what not to include?
Where does that come from? Yeah.
And the rankings, how are they ranked? Is that based on your listeners? Tell us about all this.
Yeah, so we So we, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on server side, like podcast search we have. Trying to figure out what's popular for the Discover section. That's kind of another whole side of it as well. I guess we use kind of people who's subscribing to podcasts. We can figure out which ones are popular, which ones are trending. So just making the time a bit shorter to figure out who's like, what podcasts are popular at the moment. But
and where do the, so I will post a podcast episode and I put in some magic somehow into Blogger that puts it in some stream, some feed in the world somewhere, and then it magically appears in UI.
Yeah, so right. We've got like servers that parse your podcast feed regularly. So parse is like 500,000 an hour. It's like constantly polling.
Yeah.
If you've got a popular podcast, it'll be trying to parse as much as possible.
So are there aggregated feeds of like all the available podcasts? Because I listened to a few like obscure French podcasts that I was surprised to be able to find in Pocket Cast.
People can submit the podcast so they can go through and add it. So yeah, but we still have to parse that server side. So I guess that's the advantage. We're trying to put the server in so it can take that hard load off the app. So you open your app, you've got 100 podcasts. It doesn't need to go and hit 100 podcast feeds. You can just hit one, he'll call our server, and we give you one response back.
And also the trick that here's a new thing for Tor. If there's a podcast that you can't find, you can, in the search box, you can just paste the URL to the feed and you can add it directly.
Nice. What about ratings? I hear on some podcasts like, hey, rate us on iTunes. You know, like, but that's, what do Android developers, or I'm sorry, Android users of your podcasts, you know, if they wanted to rate the podcast to sort of let people know, I love this podcast, is there some sort of
I think commonplace
for that?
There isn't at the moment. I guess the thing at the moment is you can go on social media and you can post about it, post a link to it, you can share the podcast, and that's how you can kind of get your viewers up. But
yeah, there's not a replacement. So what, 15 years ago, podcasts were basically associated with iTunes, right? That's sort of where a lot of this stuff.
So they still kind of are, I think.
Started. It's certainly the centralizing thing in that ecosystem because, outside of the iTunes store, I don't know where people rate this stuff besides, a Reddit thread.
Imagine the name podcast comes from the iPod.
For example.
But message to our listeners, please do not rate this podcast.
Yes, our egos can't bear it.
Only 5 stars, right?
Only 5 stars, yes, we'll accept that. So the playback, but I saw when you updated to the new UI, I saw some of the reactions on Play Store. Not everybody was excited about it. What have you been doing to deal with this? Like, was it just because of change or were there, like, I know, like, if it was a big rewrite, maybe there were missing features, bugs?
Yeah, I guess with version 7, we did do a big rewrite and the idea was to try and update it. We hadn't updated it for a long time. It was still using the original kind of material. And maybe, I don't know if we approached it the right way, maybe we should have done smaller incremental changes. I don't know whether other app developers do the same thing.
Well, one thing I will say is that whenever anything changes, there's always a class of people who complain. I mean, you remember when Gmail was changed back in 2011,
to the new cleaner.
Exactly. And I think there was something similar with one of the popular social networks as well, right? That I'm going to quit this network if you stick with this new design. And then 2 weeks later, everyone's fine. You know, so I think there is something about some class of users who really hate change.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We are hearing our users, like their complaints. This isn't the last version we're ever going to release. We're still working on it. We're going to be working on it for a long time. So hopefully we can like fix that over time. It's interesting that's a new announcement they made for the Play console. Your ratings are now shortened. So it's not like for the whole forever of however long you've had your app. So at the moment we're like on 4.6. The new changes, I think it's, I don't know how many months it goes across. Is it 6 months, your reviews? And now we're down to 2.2 or something for the new release. So I think we have to try and make an effort to listen to our users more maybe or address their issues a bit quicker than we are.
My favorite part about this podcast is the part where, I get to give feature requests.
You've already done that a couple of times.
That's all you've been doing to us.
But it sounds to me like maybe the new design already fixed it. But, my favorite feature in the old design was the queue, right? So my use case is that I'm heading out into the forest with my dogs, right? And so I'm going to be out for a couple hours. And so I will load up a few things. But sometimes, it'll actually finish the queue and then it stops playing. And then I have to you know, get it out of my armband, take my gloves off, you know, if it's cold in the winter.
Tor, and you do live a hard life.
I just felt like it'd be nice if it, like, it doesn't seem to me like just finishing is ever a point. You might as well just go play something new, right? Or is there some reason why?
I see a reason
get
why.
What you're saying. People, so are you streaming your podcasts?
No.
So you've got other downloaded ones?
Well, so let's say I didn't think far enough ahead, right? So I only have a couple things in the queue. Or let's say I didn't even use that. I just go and I say play on a podcast and it finishes. At that point, I would like to have something where it will not play something else until I stop it.
I have a use case against this.
Okay.
Sometimes my Bluetooth headphones don't disconnect and they're in my pocket and Pocket Cast keeps playing. And I set with my settings, when an episode is finished playing, it's deleted from the phone. So with your solution, I would try to listen to my podcast the next day and all the podcasts would be gone from my phone.
Yeah, but you have to fix this anyway. I mean, you're going to miss even the second half of an ADB episode with your thing, and that's not acceptable.
That's true.
Not acceptable. You got to update to beta 3. It fixes the Bluetooth bug.
Yeah, it's hard. So everyone kind of listens to podcasts differently. And they all seem to think it's the only
their
way.
Their use case,
is the correct way. And
just
so,
make it a setting. That's a joke.
We try to avoid settings. So.
No, that's actually a meme we have internally. Whenever people debate this, it's like, just make it a setting. There's like a picture of this like cockpit, right? Of like a million knobs. So
so
it's an anti-pattern. But
you're allowed to just nod and say politely, that's an interesting use case, Tor. Thank you for this.
We'll just follow this. We'll follow that,
No, because it's legit. I think we could do better at, especially on serialized podcasts that are more like your Netflix style. We probably could do some sort of next episode. You just play the first episode. And even if you didn't have it in your queue, if your queue is empty, we probably could just play episode two.
I generally live in my downloaded one. Like that's the folder that I, because typically I don't really want it to be pulling stuff, you know. But those are the things I want played, basically. And so with a new UI, that's typically where I go. I go to filters, download, and hit play. But I guess everyone has their own way of using it.
So switching threads a little bit, you used to be independent.
Yes.
And now you are not.
No.
So what was that about? That was what, a year ago, 2 years?
Yeah, about a year ago now.
Okay.
So we, I guess we were getting to a point where we were five people. So like getting any work done, it'd be like we spend 6 months on Android and then we switch out and we do 3 months on some server-side work. So the idea is we wanted to grow a bit. So some way to do that, we're trying to find someone we could partner with that would kind of help us with that and obviously not kind of ruin our product and not try and enforce changes on us that weren't kind of aligned with how we wanted to go.
Yep.
So teaming up with like American Public Radio, it was a perfect thing where it's not kind of profit driven, and they seemed that kind of their goals were aligned with ours. So the idea of kind of like improving the listener experience, kind of making it so publishers and listeners can get closer together. They've been really good from when we met them initially to now. It seems like they've been true to their word, and we've kind of still, we're setting the direction and they're obviously approving it, giving us feedback. But it should hopefully mean that we can grow our team. So now like we've managed to hire Ben.
Yeah, I'm one of the new ones.
Hey.
And Ben's full-time on Android. So that means that there's always someone working on Android. It's never kind of gets just left.
Yeah.
And we've done it with other products of the web player. We've got someone dedicated to it. We've got iOS as well. So it just means we can kind of get to some of the features we've always dreamed to get to a bit quicker.
Right.
It seems like an ideal fit, right? Because NPR, you know, radio stations, and you know, no offense to NPR, but like I don't listen to the radio. But I listen to podcasts and I listen to lots of NPR shows. Like that's just the way I like to consume it. Like when I'm in the forest is when I listen to the radio. And so I think that for them to have that sort of future technological view that, hey, yes, you know, we need to actually make sure we have a really good platform for delivering radio content, I think it's really smart.
So what specifically was in it for them, though? Like, is this then, like, it, with that view, it seems like, well, then they would just invest in every podcast player so that everybody got better, right? Well, they're obviously not going to do that. So are they telling their listeners, hey, if you want a premium experience, this is the app that you should get?
Yeah, I guess they do have some control, right? So we talked to them about our roadmap and what we want to do, and that they have input into that. So they still have some control. I guess if they invested in everyone, not everyone's going to want to do that. I don't know. It's not like we're not sacrificing anything by doing that.
Yeah.
Because our goals are aligned, so it seemed to make sense.
I guess I was still looking for the other part of that question, though. Like, does this become their recommended player that they advertise it on their channel, saying,
well, they used
because they can influence to some extent the direction of this player, then they like to recommend that to their listeners?
Well,
or are they really more of a silent partner?
I think they want to make it kind of open, like they like the open podcast community and they want to keep it like that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a slight play to try and stop everything being kind of in a walled garden that they can't.
Well, I think they used to, maybe they still have an NPR app that they were trying to tell people about. But it seems to me like the biggest reason for them to do this is they can get much more accurate listener information. I mean, the difficulty we have as a podcast is we don't know how many people are listening, right? Because you just send this file out to these servers and you can know sort of from your download server how many people hit the MP3 file or whatever the format is. But you don't know like how that then gets replicated by other services. Whereas if you have... Yeah. On the client, you could basically give pretty accurate counts of, hey, you know, this episode's been listened to 40,000 times and, you know, people tended to drop off at minute 37. That content must have been really boring. Let's see what was wrong with that and make sure that we fix that, right? So I would think, I'm not saying, I don't know if you want to comment on this, right? But it seems to me that if I were a publisher, this would be really, really important to have.
Reasons, yeah. Right. It's, interesting. I was going to ask about this earlier. Like, you don't do aggregation. Some services will download our podcast and then serve it from their own servers, and therefore all we saw was one download, right? I don't think Pocket Cast.
No, we don't do that. There's definitely more services around now, right, where you can figure out where your users are dropping off. Like, I think iTunes even supports that now, where you can go into the admin area and you can see where users are listening to. Have you used anything like that?
I have not, no.
So, yeah.
I have no idea how to get that information.
Okay.
Like the whole iTunes thing tends to be a black box. I can see that we have ratings there, and that's about all I know.
Yeah, we also... So NPR have their RAD podcast analytics. That's client-side. We don't do that. So we should address that, I think. Because we get a lot of... Yeah.
But like
conspiracy theories online that we're sending everything off. That's why we were bought out.
It seems like the only way you could know is if you have something running in the podcast player, right? Like how else can you know which part people are skipping or stopping?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how valuable that is to publishers. Like if you had that, would you go and have a look and see if people actually listen to the full?
But for instance, if we had that information and we knew that every time Chet speaks, they skip.
That would be very valuable to some of us.
So it can lead you down the wrong direction too, where, for example, there's situations I know of in the past where people were producing videos and then they saw that, we've got drop off after 5 minutes. So that's really our sweet spot. So we need to produce videos that are 5 minutes or less because that's when people stop watching. But in point of fact, you can't cover any real material in 5 minutes. Therefore, what audience are we trying to capture that we care about that has that little
also
attention span?
Maybe it just means that the videos were not good enough?
Possibly.
And the length was not the issue?
But no, they certainly iterated toward that model where then they became basically content-free because they were aiming for such a small window. So
I listened to one podcast. You know, it's pretty popular. And the host spent about 20 minutes yakking before they get into the content, every single episode.
Sounds like a great podcast.
Well, and what I've learned to do is to basically, before I start, you know, I'll basically just kind of drag this letter to about 20 minutes and then fast forward back until I sort of get to the part that I'm actually there for.
Yep.
And I think with some analytics, they might see that, you know what, 40% of our people are not loving this part. Maybe we'll put it at the end so it's optional or something. I'm not sure, but at least that's what I would do if I had this format, right? That was kind of like comedy and part something else.
That stores letters feature request. Can you please change and fix the podcast industry?
Speaking of which, I would like to start these shows with just like a 10-minute monologue. Do you mind? Also, all of our sponsor
content. As long as it's some of your poems, that's fine.
I can see, like, from an advertiser's point of view, if you're skipping all the ads, is that going to be detrimental to your people who are trying to make revenue as well from their podcast? It could be bad, maybe. I don't know.
Well, at least maybe then it could teach you what's happening, right? I mean, I have never understood how radio stations on the air, they'll do commercials for like 4 minutes is what it seems like. And I don't know, like who actually, unless they are like in a hospital and they're tied to the bed and they can't change, who sits and listens for 4 minutes? Everyone switches the channel. So I have to assume that this is kind of pointless being an advertiser in the middle of that block, right? It's only the first advertiser, maybe, that gets some of it. Whereas, you know, like when you use some of the streaming solutions for TV, they've limited, so it's only about 15 or 30 seconds of commercials, and that I'll just suffer through because it's not worth the trouble of trying to do it, right? So you might just learn that, hey, people are actually skipping these commercials because they're too long. But if we instead do two 15-second spots or whatever the right number is, people will listen to it. And then we're sort of, that's the sweet spot for our investment, right?
Tor, you need to change jobs.
Yeah. ADP, solving commercial advertisers' problems. Interesting. Well,
so Tor is our new producer.
So is there anything, so we've had so many feature requests from Tor that you're getting tired of. Is there anything that you still have a problem with on Android that you want to say, you know what, it would be lovely if you fixed?
XML right. Layouts.
Well,
I have a thing with XML. I'm just like, it's so verbose. Like every line starts with Android colon. I'm like, why?
Yeah. Name species. Yes. Yeah. So it's not XML itself. It's the way we use it. Yeah. The Android in front of every attribute. I mean, it makes sense.
Well, you know, you can, in Android Studio, you can just rename the prefix to be capital, I mean, to be lowercase a, right? Like, there's nothing magical about the prefix.
Could you make it a default one as well? Or so that it didn't have any prefix? So the default one would be the Android one?
Yeah. I mean, that would just result in more lookups, I guess, on our end to do it.
I think
the future for us isn't XML, right?
Yeah. No, I don't know. That's a good question. But yes, it doesn't have to be called Android.
Yeah.
You can call it whatever you want. And yes, our future indeed is right now without XML.
Yes.
We're not quite there yet.
It's a bright future.
We'll see when we get there.
For the people that weren't at I.O. last...
Well, we could talk about I.O. for a couple of minutes, since that's why you're in town, right?
But we talked about that in the last episode.
Oh,
they know everything
true.
About
okay.
Jetpack Compose.
There we go. We at least need to say the name, and then people go, oh, that's what they're
We should do an episode about Jetpack Compose.
We should do
the Compose team.
Right. In the meantime, let's talk about I.O., since that's why you're in town. It's I.O. week. Any sort of impressions you're willing to share on the air?
Oh, we're doing impressions?
Yeah.
For me, it was just the fact of like your Jetpack was released and now it's come a full year and it's still really being worked on. So it's not like it's not going away. It's not changing. It's quite
it's growing.
Yeah, it's a confidence boost that we've made the jump into using it and it's actually not paid off, I think. So
yeah, actually, the Android Toolkit team is now called has been called the Android Toolkit team for a while, not UI Toolkit, because a lot of people on the team work exclusively on those Jetpack libraries. And actually, we have fewer and fewer folks on the team who work on the platform. Now, all our investments are in Jetpack libraries, including a UI toolkit.
It just has the nice advantage that by unbundling it, you know, you can use it for basically most Android devices, as opposed to, you know, just, hey, whenever you switch to Qt, you'll get this cool thing in your app, which is all conditional.
Yeah, I do remember the logic you used to have to do to try and get certain new features in would be... Yeah, paying a switch or a checkbox or...
Yeah, I'm sure material design, when you had that, right? That must have been tricky because I'm sure you didn't want to only run on whatever it was at the time, Jelly Bean.
Lollipop.
Was it that late? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
We had a whole load. It looked a lot like material design. It was a proto-material design.
Yeah. No, you're right. API 21.
We got that feedback sort of stronger and clearer at every I.O. where we would talk about, especially in What's New in Android, we go over all the new platform features, which were all really cool. And people say, yeah, that's really interesting. I will care in 3 years.
Even three years is optimistic.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's been great that it's all unbundled. That year when, it was 2016, I think, the first Jetpack, it just felt like you all stood up there and just suddenly we're fixing every problem you have. Here's like this and this and...
I mean, it's a big mental shift for us, right? Because once you say, okay, we're going to do all those unbundled libraries, certainly we don't have to worry only about, you know, the UI toolkit or what the platform provides, because a lot of the stuff we have in Jetpack would not necessarily make sense in the platform. So it opened, and we have tons of ideas of other things we could do that, again, should not be in the platform. So for us, it's good because we can help you more now because we have this wide open field. We just have to do it.
It seems like you're listening to developers. Like, we seem like our recommendations or the pain points we're having, you're definitely addressing, which is great. Like things like app updates. If we have a bug that's really important, we want to try and get out having that. That's a new feature where it will pop up a button or even like a full screen to get you to update. Yeah, I think really it's nice little small things like that.
Yeah, I think it's also a side effect of, you know, for many, many years we were racing to like build this OS from the ground up. And now that Android is mature, I mean, you know, there's still new features coming in every release, but it's not like we have to, you know, make the graphics pipeline work or we have to make network work. So now that the OS kind of not is done, but works enough, we can focus on all those things that, you know, make your life easier.
Is there anything that you feel like we still, that's still really hard that we're not addressing?
Yeah, this is more of a tooling one, but I always find myself kind of at the end of a project going back with Leak Canary, mm-hmm. which is Square, and finding all the leaks I basically added, because Studio doesn't really do anything to, like, you know, little squiggly line, this is probably a leak or something like
that. Have you seen Leak Canary 2?
Yeah.
Okay, it's great.
Yeah, so we use Leak Canary 2, and it's great, but it would be nice if maybe, I don't know, like there could be some sort of lint check somehow or some sort of magic, machine learning actually, it maybe.
Yeah, that's difficult because what Leak Canary does, I mean, it does its magic by looking at the heap dump. And I think it could be very difficult to do that in a lot of situations by just looking at the code. But yeah, it's something we could think about.
You guys are good at solving difficult problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, we actually have some lint checks for a few known memory leak problems. In fact, one of them was a memory leak we found in our own code. And it's actually Kotlin related. It's pretty tricky. But you know, when you have a single accessor method, you know, there are ways you can write your code where it turns out that it'll make a new instance for each time. So you would have some place where you would basically pass in a runnable. And you thought, okay, I'm registering this runnable. And then later on, I'm unregistering it. This leak just happens because of this nice thing the compiler does, which makes it look like it's a single lambda, but it's actually...
And we explained these problems, this particular problem, in 2 hours and 30 minutes at I/O on stage.
Well, I have some bad news for you. If you use Studio 3.5, you know, you'll get an underline in the IDE saying this is a likely memory leak.
Nice. No, yeah. But we explain why.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. It's a nice language feature, but it's kind of tricky. And that's a rare example of a leak we can find through static analysis. Most leaks tend to be tricky. Well, there's the obvious leak of, you know, having a non-final inner class that, you know, has an implicit reference to our class. We highlight that one as well. But yeah, memory leaks in general are tricky.
Well, what's interesting, you know, most of the memory leaks come from activity extends context. The context is passed everywhere. And because the activity has reference to views, if you leak your context, you basically leak the entire view hierarchy, which comes with bitmaps and all those heavy objects. So one of the interesting things about Jetpack Compose is that we don't rely on the context as much or at all. So hopefully that will just get rid of most of them.
That's true. Leaks. Good point.
One of my things, I guess, would be, build times. So coming from, like, if you do web development, you hit refresh and it's there straight away. So you make a change, you have to wait for it to build, go on the phone. I see you've done some improvements with, like, incremental Kotlin compiling. But yeah, I guess now as the preview's getting better, it's easier just to stay in code as long as possible. And then in the final run, just have a look to see if it looks right.
Yeah, no, that's something that we know that Kotlin has slightly longer build times than before. It's something we take very seriously, and we have teams. And even for iPlay changes, I mean, we had an episode about that. But there's, you know, in the chain, you have Gradle, you have the Kotlin compiler, then you have APT, you have packaging the APK, you have sending it to the device, you have installing it. And so the tools team has been doing improvements like every step of the way. And we have a team now who helps with the Kotlin compiler. So it's not just optimizations, right?
And JetBrains also is working on this. So this is like a great collaboration between our two teams. Everyone knows that Kotlin compiler performance, you know, is important. So
yeah, I think we have discussions about build times, like about 20 times a day at work.
Yeah.
Like, know, every meeting somehow turns into build times.
Yes.
So we do care. It's just there's a lot of work to do there.
We care.
Yes.
Good note to end on. Yes. Anything else that we forgot to ask?
Don't think so.
So obviously you can find Pocket Cast on the Play Store. So if you're not using it and you're somehow listening to this episode,
I don't know,
stop,
how you're doing,
download that. Pocket Cast, download the episode again, and...
Thank you for the plug.
Yes.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you
for having us on.
Cool. Thank you.